Thank you, Johnny. My name is Ace in the Hole, and I'm an alcoholic. I was having a little trouble sleeping last night and this morning. And I got up real early before the coffee maker even got up. And I walked downstairs and walked out on the little patio out in front of the chapel. And there were 6 wheelbarrows parked out there. My name is Jim Hawkins, and I'm an alcoholic. On behalf of the Board of Trustees, sounded like, you know, they planned this damn thing this way all along. And they didn't tell me about it till Friday so they could save all that expenses of getting that guy up here from California. It's a pleasure to be here. Clarence and I checked the records last night, and I attempted to try to talk at Mont Eagle 16 years ago. Now, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol. Earl and I was talking about this morning, 23 years and 5 months. Will be 23 years and 5 months, day after tomorrow, December the 8th, 1955. I tell that for several reasons. I tell it because I want you to know how long I've been sober, because I'm proud of it. I learned a lot of AA in West Texas and all over Texas, where these folks come from that's with us. And they say out there, if you don't give your sobriety date, they doubt whether you got one. And I got one. And then besides that, it gives me an opportunity to tell you that old story I always tell you that happened to me out in Amarillo about 14, 15 years ago when Mickey and I was out there to the Top Texas Roundup. We went out there early, and they have a big barbecue on Thursday night at the old Corral Group, wash tub full of barbecue and a slop jar full of sauce. And they always have speakers from the floor, and there's no boy that was chairing speakers from the floor named Whistler Wilson. Whistler's dead now. And he, when he opened the meeting, he said, "My name's Whistler Wilson. I hadn't found it necessary to take a drink in 6 months." Introduced old Al Badger or somebody, and Al's dead now. Of course, he was one of my old favorites. And he came back and sat down after he introduced Al, and the guy sitting over on the other side of me said, "Whistler," said, "you was drunk 2 weeks ago." He said, "I know that, but by God, it wasn't necessary." I checked into a flophouse motel in Birmingham in November of 1955, after having come to AA and after having had the opportunity of sharing all of the wonderful assets that you people had offered me. And it didn't take. I came into AA in March of 55, and then I drank again, like so many of us do. But the point I'm trying to make is on this day in November, and I don't know what day it was, I drove down into Bessemer and picked up a sack of whiskey, came back home to get dressed up. You know, we got to get dressed up, we're going to get drunk. And Mickey said, now is when you need to call George. And you'll hear a lot about George today, and Raleigh, Peggy, AJ. These were my sponsors, my A sponsors. I told her where George could go, because I had a sack of liquor, and you know what I had on my mind? I'm going to go down to Birmingham, and I'm going to have me a slip. And that's about how much sense a slip makes to me. And I did that. And I don't know what day it was. I don't know what time of the month it was, November. I just know I left home that day with a sack of booze. And I didn't come back until the 8th of December. And the things that happened to me in that hotel room is some of the things, most of the things I want to talk to you about. We know what it was like. I know what it was like, and I'll tell you a little of that. We know what it's like now, and I'll tell you a little of that. But I think the most beautiful part of our program, the one that is so dear to me, is what happened. The thing that happened between what it was like and what it's like now. This was the most beautiful experience that I've ever had in my entire life. What happened? Probably it began to happen when I was 13 and took that first drink as a farm boy with a bunch of kids a little older than me. Maybe this is when it began to happen. Or maybe it happened somewhere in between there in the time that I checked in this hotel room. But my entire life was relived during these next few days or few weeks or whatever the time it was that I spent there. I had a lot of opportunities as a youngster. And I never succeeded in anything in my entire life until I found sobriety. I'm a success today. If I had a birthday today, and if I had something to wish for, I wouldn't have anything. Because I got everything. I got everything a man would want. I got sobriety. I got a wonderful, loving family of a million people. And I got God in my life. And it started to happen during the latter parts of November or the early parts of December of 1955 is when it began to happen. I began to think about the things that had been taught to me in AA during the previous 10 months that I'd been going. I had a lot of resentments toward a lot of people. One of my sponsors was a little guy that stood about 5'2" or 5'3". And he had the most serene look on his face I ever seen in my life. And I hated him. Oh God, I hated him. He always talked about God. He always talked about how God helped him and how God was in his life. And I couldn't do anything except think back in my childhood days, like we've heard mentioned here this weekend with this wonderful program about how we was raised and how things had been taught to us. I was raised in a little town in northeast Alabama, population about 300 or 400. And we had about 6 churches up there. I never did know till I grew up why they had 6 for 300 people. But I was taught as a kid that everybody went to them other 5 wasn't going to make it. Didn't have a chance. And I didn't believe that at 6 years old. And I didn't believe that at 30 years old. And I don't believe it at 55 years old either. So therefore I withdrew. I could not associate myself with my teachings as a child. I don't know whether this had anything to do with me being an alcoholic, but these are things that ran through my mind during these 2 to 3 weeks that I was in this hotel, trying, searching desperately to find what you people had and what George and AJ and Raleigh and Peggy and all those people had been trying to tell me. And every time George would talk about God, I thought he was trying to cram him down my throat. His God. Well, I'd had that. I'd had that all my life. And I couldn't buy it. But they said things to me that I couldn't get out of my mind. Like, one of these days, Jim, you're going to run out of resources. One of these days, up to now, we've given you everything we have. Everything we know about this program. And for some reason, it hasn't worked for you. One of these days, you're going to have to reach out for something that's greater than we have, greater than we can offer, greater than anything you've ever come in contact with. And George used to say, I hope to God it's not too late before you reach for this. Because you're a young man and you seem to desire sobriety. I'm still a young man. I was telling somebody out in the lobby a while ago, I got a granddaughter that's graduating from high school this year. It's kind of hard to stay 40 when you got a grandkid that's damn near 20. These are things you people tried to tell me, because I drank liquor with the best of them. I know what it is to sleep on Skid Row. I know what it is to sleep in a flop house on West Madison Street in Chicago. I drank with the best of them there when I was 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. So, what was this thing that these people were trying to tell me about? What was this thing that I couldn't bring myself to ask for that George and those people were telling me about? I never prayed in my life. There's no boy here at the meeting this morning that made a 12-step call on me while I was up there, that hotel. He liked what he saw, and he'd come back and join me and stayed about 3 days. We drank up a case of liquor. I always tell that on him. He's been there 30 years, and he's got 2 years sobriety, bless his heart. I love him. God, I love him. That's determination. That's determination. Everybody tried to help me. Everybody tried to help me. One morning on December, it must have been December the 8th, because that's the last day I had a drink, I walked down the hallway of this filthy, crummy hotel looking for a restroom. I don't know why I wanted to go to a restroom to do what I was going to do, because I wasn't going to do what you usually do. The hotel I was staying in didn't have restrooms kind of like this. Didn't that just had one on the floor, you know, one on each floor. And it was pretty crummy. But I went down there to pray. I wonder if I was hiding. I wonder what I was doing. But I remember the things people had told me in AA. And I went down to this filthy, crummy place, and I can see it today with all of the cobwebs and the filth and the grime and the old octagon-shaped tile on the floor, where the filth that was left there by the people who were like me, who were living like me, and who had been there before me. And I got on my knees. And I said, God, teach me how to pray. I have never been so alone in all my life. So desolate and so desperately alone. I felt as if I was the only living human being on earth at that moment. The only living human being on earth that had suffered the way I did. I could so identify with some of the things that Frank said the other night about watching other people. I used to go home from work at night. I was working in Birmingham, and we didn't have a car. We couldn't afford one. We barely could afford car fare. We had old street cars running at that time. We lived about 6 blocks from the car line, and this is so tremendous in my mind. And I used to walk along the street going home at night, and you couldn't help but see in the windows of these homes as you were walking along the sidewalk. And there would be families sitting together and enjoying themselves in the living room of their home. And I wanted this so bad. I wanted to be a part of the human race so badly. This is what I was praying for that morning. And I knew to have this, I would have to have some sobriety. When I asked God to teach me to pray, for however long it lasted and for whatever happened during this period of time, I have no idea how long this incident lasted, but I know when it was over, I felt as if I was in a different world. I felt as if there had been a tremendous incident taking place in my life. And I knew that if I so desired, as long as I should live, that I would never have to drink again. And I have not. And I have not. I suddenly felt the presence of something beautiful and wonderful that had crept into my life. And it hasn't left since that day. I haven't practiced the principles of this program in their entirety, and I probably never will. But I haven't drank since that day. I thought for many years I had had a spiritual awakening. I thought the ultimate had happened to me. Until an Al-Anon person told me several years later the difference between an awakening and an experience. What I had had as an experience, I had not had an awakening. An awakening is something that comes and stays, and experience is something that comes to pass. That came to pass in my life. It came and it went. I had an experience greater than any earthly thing that had ever happened to me, but it's never happened that way again. But it happened and it lasted long enough that I found a way to sobriety. I think as much as I was capable of doing so, I surrendered my life to a power greater than mine, and I found the God of my understanding in a filthy, crummy, desolate flophouse hotel restroom. I found Him there because I was there, and for no other reason. I don't think I discovered anything that morning. I don't think I knew I became aware of something that was different in my life, but I believe it was there all along. I believe it was there all along, and what I did that morning was uncovered the grace of God, because I believe that God lives in people, and I don't believe you're going to find Him anywhere except where you're at. And if you feel differently, bless your heart. If you don't believe the way I do, don't try to change me. You ain't got a chance. Mickey's been trying for 35 years. I think I uncovered something that had lived within me in my entire life. Thank God. Thank God that we are blessed with that small piece of white velvet within our soul called a conscience. Because without it, I think I'd have never made it here. I knew all of my life that I was supposed to live like this. Talk about fantasizing. I fantasized before I could talk. You don't have to be a drunk to fantasize. I always knew that I was supposed to live like this. Happy and contented. Four of the things that have meant more to me in AA, probably than anything I've ever read in our big book. I have a lot of writings and have had that was prepared by Dr. Bob. And I just love his absolutes. I just love his absolutes. And we talked about one of them the first night we were here. Unselfishness, honesty, purity, and love. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Unselfishness, honesty, purity, and love. The second spiritual experience I enjoyed was when I called one of my sponsors. Now, he had made about 5 or 6 or 7 trips from below Bessemer to Birmingham to get me, and by the time he had got there, for some reason I had changed my mind about going home. This was prior to my finding my higher power. And he said, "Jim, don't call me anymore. I'm going to lose my job coming after you." He said, "I've been coming after you now for 2 or 3 weeks, and I ain't got you yet." But on that morning when I called him on December the 8th, I called and A.J. answered the phone. And I said, "A.J., this is Jim." And he says, "Yeah, Jim." Said, "You're ready, aren't you?" I wonder how he knew. And I said, "A.J., you better come up here on the bus, because I got a car up here, and I don't think I'm going to be able to drive it." So he came and got me. And he took me home and he put me to bed, he and Mickey. And then I had running fits for about a week. But I didn't drink. And I didn't share what had happened to me with anyone. I was afraid to. I didn't think they'd believe me. And several days later, I came out of that room and when I came out, Mickey says, "There's a meeting tonight." And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Are you going?" I said, "Yeah. I'll go with you." And I said, "No, let me do it." And all of my sponsors called me. I had 4 AA sponsors plus some Al-Anon sponsors too. I needed 4 AA sponsors. There's been a lot said about sponsorship this week. One of my living sponsors is here. And there ain't no earthly way that I could tell this man how much I love him. And let me digress a little from what I'm saying to you to tell you something that happened to me and this man. One night many years ago, I was leading a discussion meeting in the Bessemer group, which is my home group, on the 5th step. And I said, "Everyone that's completely, totally, without any reservations, worked the 5th step to their satisfaction, hold up their hand." My sponsor was the first one to say something, and he said, "I haven't done that, but I'm getting ready to." And he said, "I don't even know who I'm going to take my 5th step with, but it's going to be somebody in this group, and I'm going to decide tonight who it is." After the meeting was over, he came up to me and he said, "You're it." He He says, I want to take my fifth step with you. And I says, and I want to take my fifth step with you. Just a little bit later, sitting out under the shade trees on this mountaintop in front of Mont Eagle or DuBose Conference Center, me and Riley Ruby took our fifth step together. My sponsor and I took our fifth step together. Isn't that tremendous? He's got over 30 years of sobriety, and he wanted me to hear what he needed to say. So on this night that I was to go back to the AA meeting, after I found what I was looking for, I thought, I had my third spiritual experience. My sponsors all called me and said, we'll come and get you and we'll go to the meeting tonight. And I said, no, we won't. We ain't coming after nobody. I want to go, but I want to go alone. I waited until pretty late to leave home, and I drove down in front of our little clubhouse and parked my car in front. I'd always put it in back before. I parked it up front where everybody could see it. But I waited until the meeting had begun before I went in. I was so scared, almost as scared as I was this morning. I'm not scared now, but I was a while ago. I waited until George had... George handled everything then. I hadn't had enough sobriety yet. I'll tell you about when I took over later, you know, all of us do. George was still running the group at that time, and he was handling the meeting that night. He'd already started the meeting. Now, you talk about them trying to help a guy out with his ego.